Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, Shad and I are chatting with John Rubino, founder and editor of the Dollar Collapse website. Now, John, we are recording this later in the day on Monday, and look, Monday, it's so far a good day for a lot of asset classes, but we're going to start with the precious metals as gold is still up, slightly over 1,800, pretty quick round trip flight that it had from that 1835 level just a couple weeks ago down to 1675 and now back up to 1800. John, what's your thoughts on gold, the recovery to 1800, but still, look, gold still has a lot of work to do to the upside to get a lot more of a bullish outlook. So where do you stand on gold and that whole reversal that we've seen?
Hey, Corey. Hey, Shad. Yeah. It's funny because gold had a kind of a flash crash, as you said, when nobody else did. No other asset class tanked in the last few weeks. So it was kind of an outlier. So it was a leading indicator of a big taper tantrum coming, or it was just something that shouldn't have happened and would be reversed out. And it looks like the latter is the case. You know, gold is back up along with everything else now. You know, there's no way to read anything into these short-term movements usually, but I'll try. You know, I think that there was a taper tantrum out there in prospect as the Fed began to ease back on its easing, not necessarily tightening, but ease less aggressively going forward. At least that's what they were saying they were intending to do. And I think a lot of markets just were skeptical of that. You know, they assumed that the Fed was never going to be able to do that. And they turned out, I think, to be right. The Fed doesn't get to tighten from here on in. They just can't because this global financial system is so over leveraged that not even tightening, but just a lessening of aggressive ease would send a lot of different leveraged sectors into a tailspin. So, you know, and then the Fed is meeting now at Jackson Hole. You know, all the talking heads are going to say a lot of things up in the upcoming few days. And most of it is probably going to be positive from the standpoint of ongoing ease, just because they can't do it because of all the leverage that's out there in the world. And now they've got the Delta variant slowing down economic growth and, you know, leading to a potential lockdown again, like 2020 and everything as their excuse for scaling back their talk of a coming taper. So I think that's what the markets are interpreting from what's going on right now. They're assuming that that whole taper talk thing was just a little blip, a little trial balloon that didn't work. And now they'll go back to aggressive ease, which makes inflation once again an issue, you know, so that's now the thing that we have to worry about rather than a tightening of monetary policy.
Well, John, just a couple of weeks back when we had that move down in gold, the commentary coming out of that was pretty bearish for most of the people we talked with, even some of the companies we talked with, where folks were expecting that level to possibly get tested again, which was originally the double bottom from March and then, you know, that 1675 level tested a third time. And a lot of people thought it would get tested a fourth time and people were talking lower lows. Most people were not discussing, hey, we think gold's going to spring back up above 1800 in 2 weeks. And most people were believing that the Fed was going to be tapering soon. And most of the generalist media is on the side of the Fed that they are going to be tapering. The question is, when will they start? So do you think that coming into this Jackson Hole and the September Fed meeting, they may keep dialing that back verbally to the market and that this was just a trial balloon? Or do you think they actually are going to start tapering and they're just moving the date back?
Well, I think traders are expecting them to dial it back. That's why they're buying stocks so aggressively right now. But there actually is one other explanation for why gold snapped back. Because in my little pocket of the universe here, there's an iron law that says when I make any kind of a big trade, the markets immediately go against my trade. All right, every single time. And I put a whole bunch of lowball offers in on mining stocks in the last week, expecting maybe a bigger flash crash or a taper tantrum that takes gold down along with it. And on the off chance that that was happening, I put in bids for a whole bunch of miners. And that made gold go up. I think there's a good chance that that's what happened. So you're welcome.
John, thanks for that. Nice contrary sure. Indicator there. What about the balance, though, between the U.S. equity markets, too? Because over this last year, it's been, I think, a valid argument saying that, look, U.S. markets have performed drastically better than some of the safer assets, especially than gold and the gold stocks. And that's what actually draws money in, is a solid performance, rather than people saying that, oh, stocks are cheap when they just get cheaper. U.S. markets are also up on Monday here. However, gold is up a little bit more. But again, you need to balance that out with U.S. markets just keep on hitting all-time highs, and they keep on staying in this kind of bullish technical outlook. John, what do you have to say about U.S. markets and their balance into this?
Well, this is kind of the Martin Armstrong scenario. He's an analyst who's been saying all along for, you know, better part of a decade now, that U.S. stocks were just going to keep going up and up and up, because no matter how bad things get here, they're worse in the rest of the world. So even if the U.S. screws up, that scares people in other countries, and they want safety, which right now in the global financial system is defined as U.S. blue chip stocks. So no matter how bad the world gets, or no matter how bad the U.S. gets, the rest of the world is perceived to be in worse shape, and that causes money to flow into the U.S. And even if we cause the trouble in the rest of the world, which is the case a lot of the time, that still helps our financial markets. And I think there's some truth to that. I think a lot of money is flowing from other countries. Like China is kind of in turmoil right now. Australia and parts of Europe are seeing these anti-lockdown protests that turned very violent, shockingly violent, based on the news reports. And that is sending money into U.S. equities as safe havens. And that seems to be part of the dynamic out there. Now, eventually, that's going to turn out not to be the case. You know, you can't treat a stock that is trading at 50 times sales or whatever, with a lot of these tech stocks, as a safe haven in the long run. That's just not how financial systems work. So eventually that's going to turn out to be a mistake, but I wouldn't want to venture a guess at the point at which that happens. You know, it could be that U.S. stocks double again from here before they have a, 2000.com level crash. You just can't know, because there's so much capital all around the world that could flow into the U.S. Now, you know, precious metals and some of the other sectors that are up but not dramatically up might end up being the beneficiaries of the discrediting of blue chip tech stocks as safe havens. But we don't know when that's going to be. So we don't know when that factors into precious metals. I think it's out there. You know, it's another good thing that's out there for precious metals, but the timing is completely unpredictable.
Well, John, that's what I was going to ask you about, because we saw over the last year and a half, 2 years, record amounts of new trading accounts set up by retail traders in the U.S. And we see the turbulence overseas for foreign investors that are piling into the U.S. stocks. So as a result, the FANG stocks and Tesla have just shot up higher and higher, while the market breadth itself is still kind of weak under the surface. And I read an article over the weekend that said about 26% of all investors were invested in one of the meme stocks this last winter. So like in January and February, March, when those were really a big deal, that means 1/4 of all investors were either in GameStop, AMC, BlackBerry, Hertz, those kind of names. And they've just pulled out of those and funneled into these tech stocks as their safe haven. But most of these new investors have never seen a real market correction yet. They've never really had a 20, 30, 40% pull down that lasted more than a month or two. So when that actually happens, if there is a time where we see this rollover, do you think some of them will move over to the safe havens of the precious metals as new entrants into the sector? Or do you think they'll continue to piling into the cryptos like we've seen recently?
Well, they'll probably do both, because, you know, the crypto story and precious metals, the precious metal stories are very similar. You know, once you you understand one, by definition, you understand the weakness of fiat currencies and the attraction of real assets, hard money. So there's no reason to think that gold bugs won't end up owning some crypto and crypto fans won't end up owning some gold and silver going forward, because it's basically, that's the same team. You know, those are guys playing different positions on the same team, and eventually they'll see that. So I think that's probably a given going forward. But, in the bigger picture, yeah, I think that beginning investors are wildly over-optimistic, as new investors tend to be. And one of the functions of financial markets is to teach these guys life lessons. And it's been, because this has been the longest bull market in history, the longest expansion in history, there's a whole generation of people out there who have been in the markets for 5 or 10 years and who have never, like you said, they've never seen a humbling kind of market that teaches everybody that they're not as smart as they thought they were. And they will eventually, you know, markets just don't go on forever. We have a long history of markets, and never in that history has a bull market just gone on and never stopped. So this one has, you know, some of the stuff we talked about before, you know, pushing it along, like lots of foreign capital flowing into a handful of markets and tremendous amounts of new currency being created by central banks that have to go somewhere. Some of it is going into equities. That's given this bull market longevity beyond any previous bull market, but it doesn't make it immortal. You know, the thing will crack eventually. And then a lot of these beginning investors, hopefully they don't have their life savings tied up in these meme stocks. But unfortunately, a lot of them do. And so the lesson is going to be more painful this time around than it usually is because it's gone on so much longer.
Yeah, we'll see when that correction or crash comes. But I know we've been waiting for it for quite a while now. And somehow these markets stay elevated. Look, there's still a lot of money out in the system and a lot of money that keeps coming into the system. That's a key to keeping these markets elevated. But yeah, I don't know, John. I know a lot of people are just waiting for that pullback in the broad markets. But again, hasn't come, and these markets continue to outperform, even though right now we are seeing some extremely weak breadth. But that's a whole other topic right there. John, thanks as always for your time, buddy. I hope you have a great rest of your week, and we'll chat again in another couple weeks.
Great. Thanks, Corey. Thanks, Chad.